Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I just figured out the Eagles' biggest advantage. It's a league of mediocrity. That gives you a chance every week. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Years ago, Cale Sanderson took Penn State Wrestling out to Utah Valley State, and they sold it out as Cale went back home. Well, last night in college basketball, Utah Valley State made a statement and beat 12th-ranked BYU.
Harmon with the hot hands. On the drive, leaves it for AMAC. Got it! Utah Valley has stunned BYU.
How about that? That was in overtime last night. Give them all the credit in the world. Great win. With that, now we bring in the outstanding Ruben Frank, NBC Sports Philly. Rube, how you been?
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, you tell me. Hey, what's going on? You tell me. Because there are a lot of Eagles fans are looking at that performance on Sunday, and they just were taken aback by it. What was your response watching it?
Well, I think my response was, you know, not really that surprised. I mean, the Eagles aren't good enough to beat anybody when they don't play well. I mean, we talked about it on the pregame show. You can look at one loss records all you want, and the Giants don't have a good record, but they're a professional team, and they have professional players. And if you go in there and, you know, and stink up the joint, you're going to lose the game. I don't care who you are. And the Eagles aren't good enough to go into any stadium and beat anybody if they don't play well, you know, and we saw that. And maybe, you know, that's a good lesson for him. We'll find out Sunday, but it was disappointing, but certainly not surprising. I mean, this team, you know, they don't have a winning record. They haven't accomplished anything. They haven't won anything. So, you know, if you go in there and drop passes and commit penalties and, you know, turn the ball over four times and, you know, do all those kind of things, you're going to lose, and that's what happened.
You know what's interesting about the game is that in watching it is that I didn't feel like the Giants did anything exceptional and won. You know, sometimes a team will do something and they did a few things except. I didn't feel like the Giants did anything exceptional. What did you think?
No, this is really an instance of the Eagles losing a game more than the Giants winning it. I mean, the Giants made a couple plays, but the Eagles outgained them by, what, almost 100 yards? I mean, it comes down to turnovers. You commit four turnovers and you don't get any takeaways, you're just not going to win that game. So, you know, the Giants played it close to the vest. They didn't really run the ball at all. They hit a couple passes, and they just didn't turn the ball over and got themselves a win.
All right, so any thought process changing your part when it comes to Jalen Hurts? You know, sometimes you are who you are. And you can have a bad game. I mean, Aaron Rodgers' opener against New Orleans was a bad game. What's your thought on Hurts now that you're getting more of a feel for him as a quarterback?
Yeah, this was, you know, not a good day for him. And, you know, you look at the sum total, he's done some things really, really well, and there's other things he struggled with. We have 12 games now, and I kind of throw out last year, you know, different coach, different scheme, different players, certainly different O-line. I kind of throw that out and look at, kind of evaluate off what he's done this year. And it's a mixed bag. And, you know, you want to see growth in the passing game. I mean, we know he can run. We know he's a tremendous athlete, a great leader. He's got all the intangibles. Teammates love him. He always says the right thing, does the right thing. You can see the young guys following him. But if you can't make, you know, passes in this league, you know, if you can't get the ball down the field to your receivers, none of that other stuff is going to matter. So, We had seen a little bit of growth in that area, not a ton. We'd seen some. You know, they run the ball so well and so much lately. It's hard to get a real sense of where he was as a passer. But you know, we saw Sunday. It was a big step backward. So as far as making any kind of conclusion about what he is and what they should do in the draft or signing a guy or trading for, I'm not there yet because there's five games left, and but I want to see as much of him as possible. But certainly, you know, you want to see him really rebound from that game, because that was, I mean, that was a game where he made mistakes that if you're in the NFL and you know, you talk about Aaron Rodgers in the opener, and you know, he's won a Super Bowl, he's been multiple MVPs. It's like Jalen Hurts doesn't have that to fall back on. So he made plays in there that you wouldn't expect any college quarterback to make, as far as throwing the ball into traffic, you know, poor decisions, you know, just putting it up for grabs. So he's got a rebound. I'm real curious to see how he bounces back against the Jets Sunday back at the Meadowlands, and you know, and take it from there. I haven't given up on him. I still think he offers a lot, but I think we all need to see a little bit more.
He does offer a lot. There's no getting around it. The Eagles gave up 13 points in the game, didn't win. But what did you think of the Philadelphia defense?
Well, they've been pretty good for a while now, and you know, they're playing well. And you know, you give up 13 points, you should win that game. I think they've been pressuring better. They didn't force any turnovers, which is disappointing. I mean, Daniel Jones puts the ball up for grabs, I think, more than any quarterback in the game. They haven't gotten sacks. They got 19 sacks in 12 games, which is 30th in the league. So, you know, they're tackling well. They're physical. They've gotten good pressure. They just haven't gotten the sacks and the turnovers. And, you know, that's kind of the next step for this group. They're keeping points down for the most part. I think it's pretty good defense right now. They you know, they've got some new guys in there who are playing well. T.J. Edwards has really, really improved that linebacker core. He's made a big difference. Davion Taylor did as well before he got hurt. But, you know, you're seeing a defense that doesn't really have any weak links right now. I mean, the secondary's played a lot better. The linebackers, since the changes, have played better. And the defensive front, I would say, has been disappointing based on our expectations, but it's still a pretty good front. So, there's, you know, I think what you're seeing is a new defensive coordinator really starting to understand his personnel and figure out how to use guys, how to get the most out of the players he has. That's a process that takes a while, but and it's also a product of not facing Tom Brady and Pat Mahomes and Dak Prescott in a row. You know, so I think you know, being honest, I mean, it's. Look, any defense is going to struggle when you're facing those kind of guys back-to-back-to-back or almost. So I think you're seeing some growth, but also the schedule certainly has been favorable too.
I know when Penn State has played Wisconsin, and Jack Ham and I, you know, we'll break down Wisconsin. We were always impressed by T.J. Edwards. You mentioned him in that answer right there. What's allowed him to translate to become a good NFL linebacker?
Yeah, I think, you know, he was undrafted out of Wisconsin, and, you know, he was kind of raw. And one of those guys, sometimes those undrafted guys just need time, you know, to really learn the NFL game. He's always been a big hitter, but now he kind of knows where to be. He's more disciplined. I think he's in better shape to be able to handle 50 snaps a game, you know, than when he was starting some games as a rookie. He's made a big difference, and you know, he's fun to watch. He's, you know, he's given them a real big upgrade at linebacker. And you're right. I mean, he was always a physical player, but I think he's learned how to. He's gotten better in coverage too. I mean, he's become a decent coverage linebacker. So, and he can blitz. So I don't think he's ever going to be an elite player just because, you know, the reason he was undrafted is because he doesn't run fast. But he gets the most out of what he has, and I certainly wouldn't want to run the ball against him because he's one of those really physical interior linebackers, old school guy, you know, Big Ten guy that you just don't want to see, you know, when you're running up the middle.
Outstanding answer. It's exactly who he is. All right, Jalen Reagor. To me, guys are who they are. And that's why I never liked the Reagor pick to begin with, because I watched some of the stuff at TCU and I went, okay, I don't get it.
Yeah.
How much longer? I mean, look, they're not going to cut him next week. And you and I both know that when you're a first-round pick, you got to play your way out of someplace.
Exactly.
Is he in the process of playing his way out of the place?
That's a great question. And you know, we just had Doug Peterson was just on one of our podcasts with John Clark, and he talked at length about Jalen. You know, he was with Jalen last year, and it was really interesting to hear him talking about him because everybody in the organization thinks he has talent. Now, does he have enough talent? Should he have been drafted where he was? No. But he has enough talent to play in the league. And, you know, I think the problem now is upstairs. And I think that's clear watching him. He's thinking. He's out there thinking, am I going to catch this ball? Am I going to drop this ball? And you can't play like that. No, you can't play thinking about whether you're going to drop a pass. Like, the longer it takes the pass to get to him, the less chance he has to catch it. You see, he makes some great catches when you know, it's mid-range or, you know, like a 12-yard out. The ball gets there in a second, he catches it. It's all just reflex and, you know, he just catches the ball. But the more time he has to think, so that tells you it's mental at this point. He's doubting himself. Confidence is an issue. I'm not saying he would ever be a great player, but he should be better than this. So, they don't really have a lot of options. And I think it does make sense to, you know, to stick with him and try to get him going. It just can't be at the expense of the offense. And you see there's times where they run these Rager plays, you know, these you know, little short passes and try to get him the ball quickly so he can use it. But, it you know, they always end up in, like, a loss of yards. You can't do that. So they're trying to get him going, you know, in the scheme of things, and it's hard to do because you can't play football trying to get someone going. That can't be your goal. So it's a tricky position, but they don't really have anyone else to put out there. So first-round pick, you made that investment. You got a lot riding on the kid. He's going to get every opportunity. And, you know, the Eagles went through this with Nelson Aguilar a couple years ago, and Doug Peterson gave him a week off. He had a terrible game against the Seahawks. Really similar to Jalen's game, Rager's game against the Giants Sunday, and he took a week off. He ran scout team. He was inactive on game day against the Packers. He cleared his head, and you know, and he didn't exactly light it up when he came back, but he had a clear head. He didn't drop any more passes, and went on to have an incredible game in the Super Bowl. He had three straight first down catches on a game winning drive in a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And he's now in his seventh year. He had almost, you know, 900 yards last year for the Raiders. So he's become a decent player. And, you know, Doug on the John Clark podcast said, you know, there could be some value in doing the same thing with Rager. Get him away from the game for a week. Let him clear his head. Let him, you know, run the service team for a week and work on his confidence and just have fun. Just go out without the pressure of knowing there's a game. Just go out and have fun. You know, Nick has said he won't do that, but I certainly think there'd be some value in it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Finally, Zach Wilson did come back last, you know, and is now back with the Jets. They did beat Houston last week. It's another, quote, NFL team. What's your thought on this?
Well, my thought is the matchup, I think, of a veteran defense and a young quarterback is one that the Eagles have to take advantage of. They have to show him looks that he hasn't seen. They have to confuse him. They have to mix things up, and they have to hit him. I mean, he's a guy who does, I guess it's true for every quarterback, but he doesn't handle pressure well. And, you know, they've been up and down with pass pressure this year. They've got to get some pressure on him and force him into some mistakes. You know, I think when he can set his feet, I'll tell you what, when he can set his feet and he's got good protection and there's a guy open, he'll fire it down there. He's got a big arm. That's not the problem. The problem is when he's got to move around, when his initial read isn't open, you know, when he's, you know, he's got somebody bearing down on him. He's just, you know, he struggles in those situations. So they got to make sure he doesn't get comfortable in the pocket. Because if he does, you know, he could make it a long day. But I think they've gotten decent pressure. That's got to continue. And if it does, they should get out of there with a win. But certainly nothing's coming easy to this team right now. So I think everyone's going to be holding their collective breath Sunday at 1.
Rube, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time, as always.
Anytime. Good talking to you.
You too, Ruben. Ruben Frank, NBC Sports Philly. All right, so do you feel any better?
Slightly.
Not a good start.
Slightly. Let's go with that.
This is the part that would bother me if I was an Eagles fan. And it goes back to the question and how I phrased it to him. The Giants didn't do anything special or exceptional in the game and won.
Oh, yeah. It's extremely bothersome. Absolutely.
In other words, the Giants did not play over their heads and won.
Yeah.
That's, in other words, of all the days, Barkley really broke loose. Boom. No, of all the days, Daniel Jones was really sharp. No. The Giants didn't do anything exceptional. And they won the game. Wow. Okay, back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You talked a little bit about your recruiting philosophy previously. I'm curious what you learned from James Franklin, in particular at Penn State, to help kind of mold that philosophy over the years.
Details, details, details. When it comes to recruiting, he is relentless in the details, and following through and being thorough and building those relationships with the high school coach, with the trainer, with the parents, with the uncle, with the barber that cuts hair. I mean, it doesn't matter. And, so I think over 12 years with James, just his relentless effort on the recruiting front and being actively involved as a head coach is very important to me.
Virginia Tech football coach Brett Pry at his press conference today. And that is the way it is. You have to be, and James is very, very detail-oriented. Very detail-oriented. And because of that, it makes a big difference. And the Penn State is on the verge of signing an outstanding class. At least on paper it is. We'll see how it plays out over the next 3-4 years. But they're on that verge, and I'm telling you, there's a lot of optimism in that building about the 23 class. But yes, details. Very detail-oriented. And they're relentless with it. They are always, whenever the rules state you can be in contact, they are in contact. Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver Antonio Brown has been suspended for 3 games for violating the COVID-19 policy. The league and the players' union together found that Brown was among 3 players to misrepresent their vaccination status. A former live-in chef of Brown said earlier this month that Brown had obtained fake COVID-19 vaccination cards over the summer. And evidently, their investigation proved that it was true. There's just a cloud that follows this guy, and it's because he keeps seeding the cloud, it rains. So there you go.
This is my surprise face.
Also suspended for 3 games were backup safety Mike Edwards and free agent wide receiver John Franklin III, whom the Buccaneers waived in August. All 3 players accepted their discipline, will not appeal. Brown and Edwards' suspensions are without pay. Both are eligible to be back in the lineup December 26th against Carolina. Brown was already out the next 2 games anyway with an ankle injury and a heel injury. He hasn't played since week 7. Shocking.
Now, if that was already true, they should make him sit out the additional 3 games. Like, he shouldn't get a twofer.
Yeah, except I think the rules, don't allow them to do that, Matt.
Ah.
Because who's to say, who's to say he's out 2 to 3 weeks, you know what I mean?
Right.
I that becomes a very gray area. What you're saying is logical, except you can't do that. Because now you're assuming the length of an injury. All right, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Saturday, 4 o'clock, CBS, SEC title game, Georgia-Alabama. One of the absolute best in the business, my good friend Brad Nessler. Happy holidays.
Steve, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm great. I just got downtown about an hour and a half ago, so even though it's a home game, I'm on the road. So, downtown Atlanta.
Downtown Atlanta. All right. You and I have now have each had the experience of calling the multiple overtime game. Admittedly, mine went nine. You ended up with four. What was it like when it got to the two-point conversion part to you? There's drama, but what was it like calling it?
Yeah, well, you know better than I do, I guess. But, first of all, that might be – it's not the first overtime game I've done, but I think it's the first overtime that's gone into that area where you just do the two-point plays. And so, sometimes you forget that there's not another play, JT Finley throws into the end zone and McKinstry breaks it up in the back of the end zone, and I'm thinking, okay, they still got another down. And then I sort of forgot. Right. It's going right back the other way, to the other team. And so between putting the graphic up every time we got to another overtime, and then we just kind of slid the color of the graphic down from white to yellow to keep everybody abreast of how it works. And so I was sort of learning as we were going, because I never got to that point before. So, the drama got bigger, except I almost didn't realize it in the second or third overtime that what was going on. And so you get down to the fourth one, and then you go, okay, I think I got this figured out now, just in time.
Yeah. what it felt like to me in doing it was I felt like I was watching penalty kicks in the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. When we got done, I had a lot of people that got a hold of me and said, I don't like it. I do like it. I got mostly don't like it. But, and then I had to explain to people, why it came about, the seven overtime games that they had with LSU and A&M or whoever. And, you end up playing almost an entire extra game. And, to keep the players, from having to do that many extra plays and the possibility of getting hurt, I get it. But it seems like kind of a weird and cheap way to win a ball game.
Yeah.
When you win it
that
way, it's great. When you lose it that way, you go, there could have been something else that could have been done.
You've obviously done a lot of Alabama SEC title games. So it's not as if Alabama hasn't had pressure going into this game before. And they've almost always responded. Is the pressure a little different this time because of the one loss to Texas A&M?
Yeah, I think the fact that they're not used – I don't know if the players really realize underdog. They don't care, I don't think, unless you're a three-touchdown underdog or something. Then you're going, well, this is kind of embarrassing, and we're getting shortchanged here. The Alabama players are too good and have been over the years that I don't know that it matters to them. But I think they'll feel a little more pressure because, they had five games that were, one possession game or a one touchdown game or less. Georgia had 10 of their 12 wins by 24 points or more. So, when you look at it that way, it used to be Alabama was doing what Georgia did this year and vice versa. Right. And so I think they feel that pressure. And I think the fact that they got down to, the very nitty gritty against Auburn and didn't play very well, and the fact that their offensive line's not playing very well, they have to feel all that. But, it's kind of hard to say, is there pressure on Alabama? They win so many titles and they win so many games. They seem to find a way to win most of them. And, you know, for the people that don't know about the Texas A&M game, they had a touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, you know, and they lost on the field goal at the buzzer. So you take back one possession of Texas A&M's, and Alabama would be undefeated too. Just not as lopsided score-wise as Georgia's done.
Right. You've seen enough of Bryce Young now. How poised is this guy under pressure?
He's really good, man. You know, at the beginning of the year, I thought, okay, highly touted, five-star kid, I get it. We got to see him a little bit last year, and he looked good. And then you watch the spring game, and, you know, that's just a glorified, it's not even a scrimmage, really. And, you know, he looked good in that, and I just kept telling people, just hold on, we'll wait and see. And he didn't take him long to show me, you know. He goes down to Florida in the third week or whatever, and they get the pressure cooker situation in the crowd at the Swamp. At the time, was still into the season, and, you know, they were going wild, and he doesn't change much, you know. What you see is what he is. Really a pleasant kid to be around, and, you know, having interviewed him and sat down with him, he's California cool, man, and it's just ingrained in him, and I can see why, because he's got all the tools, and, you know, he wants to be, he patterns his game after Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I guess from the football standpoint, it is. But, you know, every coordinator we've talked to from the midway point of the season on has said Patrick Mahomes, you know. So when you get compared like that and you're only a 20-year-old kid, you know you're a pretty cool customer, and he really is. He doesn't seem to get rattled. And even last week, you know, when they're at the 3-yard line and there's a minute left, they don't have any timeouts. And I think I said something to the effect of, you want a Heisman moment, here you got it, kid. And yeah, it didn't take him long. He still had 24 seconds to spare at the end when he got the touchdown.
Amazing. So now with the Georgia defense, you've had the privilege of announcing a lot of games where you've seen a lot of terrific college defenses. What makes this Georgia defense really good in your eyes?
I think the fact that they don't have, like, a Will Anderson guy like Alabama has. They don't have, like, one superstar guy, but they play together so well, Steve. One guy makes a play, and then the other guy right next to him wants to make a play. And then they realize that if they just keep swarming to the ball, the plays will come. And they don't have, you know, I say their front seven. It's really their front 14. They've got interchangeable guys at defensive line and linebacker like you've never seen before. And it really doesn't matter who's in there. And we, you know, we'll ask either Dan Lanning, the defensive coordinator, or ask Kirby Smart, you know, who's starting at this position. That they don't care. And, you know, half the time they won't tell us. And so we kind of quit worrying about it. We put up this, here's a bunch of guys you're going to see for Georgia's defense. We started doing our lineups that way this year because there's so many interchangeable parts on everybody's team now, you know, four wide receivers and maybe three tight ends and da-da-da-da. So we actually don't do starting lineups anymore, and I'm glad we don't, because in Georgia's defensive case, they've got so many guys that can play, especially the front seven, front 14, whatever you want to call them. And that's allowed them, you know, that's allowed their secondary to get better this year. That was the question mark really earlier in the season, how good was their secondary. But their front guys are so dang good that it's allowed over the course of 12 weeks those guys in the secondary to grow, get better, be more cohesive. And, you know, they really play together well. So I think not having a superstar, with the exception maybe Jordan Davis, everybody knows him because he's a mountain of a man, and at 360 he's kind of hard to miss. And Nakobe Dean, their middle linebacker, I think should win the Butkus. But other than that, they've got a whole bunch of guys that can play together really well.
Yeah, Davis, the largest man I've ever seen directing the Georgia band. So I got to give him credit. I mean, that is one gigantic man. Stetson Bennett. He's interesting because he is the quarterback of the number one ranked undefeated team in the country, and I don't think a lot of people really know much about him. So when you have watched him, what has allowed him to be a contributor and not a detriment to what Georgia does?
The fact that he can move around and you make plays with his feet, which JT Daniels can't do, or, you know, I suppose he can if he was pressured enough. But, you know, some of the RPO things that Georgia does fits Stetson Bennett perfectly. He really has a good feel for the long ball. I mean, he gets it downfield I know everybody says JT Daniels is the NFL type of guy and the NFL type of arm and all that kind of stuff. But, man, if you really look at Stetson Bennett, and if he would have started the other three games that he didn't start this year, and if you just prorated his stats, I mean, right now he's got 2,000 yards passing and 21 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. You know, if you give him 2 to 3 touchdowns in 3 more games, he's looking at 30 touchdown passes and, you know, 3,000 yards, and that ain't bad for a college quarterback.
That's right.
Not Bryce Young numbers, you know, and not Kenny Pickett numbers and that kind of thing, but he's just... I think the coolest thing about it is the team really, really plays for him, and they rally around him. And I don't know if it's because of his underdog stature and the fact that he's basically been at Georgia twice. You know, he left, went to a junior college, came back, was still fourth string. I think the fact that he has worked his butt off to get where he is, I think the rest of the team appreciates that, and they really rally around him.
Finally, when you look at Alabama, you obviously have a chance to talk to coordinators. What kind of job is Bill O'Brien, former Penn State head coach, the job he's done with that offense? Because obviously Sark went to Texas, and O'Brien's the guy that stepped in.
Yeah, he brought some of the stuff from the Texans that I think we see a little bit of Deshaun Watson stuff in Bryce Young, and Bryce has told us that. And he said, you know, when Steve Sarkisian moved on, Bryce Young said, you know, when you come to Alabama, the one thing you know is that even if a coordinator leaves, or maybe your position coach leaves, that Coach Saban is going to bring in a guy that's just as good, if not better, than the guy that he replaced. And so he said, when Coach O'Brien came in, he said, I didn't have any qualms at all. I'm going, hey, dude's coming from the NFL, which is where I'm going eventually. He's going to have new ideas, and coach is not going to put me in a bad spot. So, you know, I think it's been a little bit of an eye-opener for Bill going back to college, and you know, everybody says, hey, I learned a lot from Coach Saban. Well, I guess it doesn't matter if you're in the NFL and been a head coach, or been a head coach at Penn State or wherever, you still learn stuff. And I think, you know, anybody in any form of business, I think you can always get smarter or better, and I think it's been good for him to come back to the college game. I don't know what the future holds for him, if he stays there or if he gets, you know, one of the gigs that's open right now. But he's a hell of a coach, and he's doing a really good job with their offense.
Well, if it turns out that you cross paths with him to get ready for this, please give him my best. He's one of the great guys I've ever dealt with here. So,
I will see him tomorrow, and I'll give him your best, buddy.
Please do, because he's just one of the great guys ever. He, Colleen, great family. You're one of the best ever. Thanks so much, Brad, for your time. Really appreciate it very much, and great call on Saturday.
You got it, Steve. I'll talk to you soon, pal.
You bet. Brad Nessler, CBS, one of the best ever. And not only that, you can say that easily because he's not only one of the best ever in terms of the ability to announce, but he's one of the best ever off the air, too. I mean, what you hear with him is what you get. He's just a great guy. Great guy who's terrific at his job. Back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today. We're brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Thank you to Coach Franklin. James is like a brother to me. 12 years. I wasn't sure I'd ever step out and do my own thing. And it took this place to do it. It took what Coach built and Bud and so many others to be the right place for me. And it was the right time. So I thank James Franklin, and I thank Penn State.
I think the world of that guy. I do. What a privilege for me to have probably hours of conversation over the years with Brent Pry. I think the world of him. And when he said, you know, he wanted to thank Coach and Bud, he was referring to Frank Beamer and Bud Foster, by the way. Because when Brent was there, Frank was the head coach, Bud was the defensive coordinator. That's who he meant by Coach and Bud at that point. Think the world of Brent Pry. Now, of course, you know, there was a problem with what he said. You know, he thanked James Franklin profusely. He thanked Frank Beamer, Bud Foster. Guess who he didn't thank?
The suit.
Bingo. Again, you know, if you're not paying the proper homage to the mythical power that is the king of the let's just have little mini hot dogs at the holiday party for 3 hours.
S-U-I-T, that spells suit-da!
And it is mythical. I mean, Susquehanna Life is going by the boards, right? That's the story?
Yes.
And they never did a cover on...
I guess not, yeah. This is it.
They never did a cover.
Not to my knowledge.
On the broadcast Cyclone of the Valley. Because I was aching to be interviewed for it. Aching. Ironically, so was Mark Lawrence, so was Drew, so was Roger. We were all aching. Mertzi, we were all aching. Please, no. Interview us. I'll make time. But you have a lot of games. I'll make time. I'm telling you, we all wanted to talk. Kind of felt like this was our opportunity. Oh, darn. A feature story gone bad. Oh, hey, Santa tonight. Hey, wasn't it great having Brad Nessler on? Isn't he the greatest?
I love Brad. I want to have a beer with him sometime. I really do.
Oh, my. I have.
I know, yeah. I envy you.
He's phenomenal. He's just a great guy to sit down and just talk. He's doesn't get any better. So tonight's Santa, night four. We made the turn into December. Five more children tonight that get to go in the Magic Radio. Incredible. Now, are you sometimes still in the building when they start bringing the families in?
Yes, that is the case when I'm on my way out the door, usually.
You have to stop, sign a lot of autographs.
No, actually.
Oh. Because, see, the suit's already signed, like pre-signed a bunch of them. And he hands it out to the families as they come in. Right. And I guess Lawrence tells me the next day, like, they just empty the garbage out. Because they don't want the suit to know what happened with the autographed pictures. What?
I just know the cleaning company comes in once a week now.
And believe me, like, look at all these autographed pictures. What's going on here? What's next? Mini hot dogs with no mustard at the holiday party? No, they're actually doing that. What? Think of what you're going to be missing.
It is what it is.
Boy, you certainly blow that off with complete ease. You should stop there first, then go.
Well, the only possibility would be to go to do my aunt's, then come, because it's 4 to 7.
Yeah. I mean, but think about this. I mean, you know, Drew will be there, so it'll be a saving grace. So Drew's fun. Lawrence is fun. Mertzie's a riot. Okay? Right? I show up, I'm a few laughs. In the end, it balances off the guy with the lampshade on top of the table, albeit an extra large lampshade.
Well, come to think of it, there's a slight possibility maybe I can pull off the final hour or so, because I do not want to leave until at least 4:30, because the Eagles play at 1, and I'll have the game on while I'm there at my aunt's house, so... The plan would be to leave right after the game's over.
Who are they playing that day?
That's Washington that day.
Oh, they're not going to win that game. What the heck? Don't bother.
We'll see how things go. But that's the plan for now.
They got Taylor Heineke at quarterback. You wish you had Taylor Heineke at quarterback.
He is playing pretty well right now.
Yeah, I know he is. Playing terrific. They got all these injuries on defense. They're still winning. Imagine that concept.
We'll see what they do against Vegas this week.
Excuse me, but you'd better beat the Jets.
Well, that goes without saying, yeah.
You're going to have problems with the Jets.
Yeah, I'm smelling bounce back, but it's not going to be easy. I can tell you that.
The Jets?
Yeah.
I can see the Jets bouncing back. Yeah, sure.
Actually, that'll be two in a row. The Jets won last week.
I know. They've got momentum. You have none. I was very impressed. I mean, there were moments against the Giants where the Eagles showed me absolutely nothing.